Hello and welcome to Jesus Week on Catholic Answers Live. That's right, it's Jesus Week. On Sunday, we will celebrate the Feast of Christ the King, which is the culmination of the entire liturgical year. And 2020 has been a year of many concerns, many ups and downs, many difficulties, many issues to discuss. And we thought the best way to end the liturgical year is to devote every single one of our programs this week, whether it's our podcasts on Catholic Answers Focus or each show on Catholic Answers Live to the person of Jesus. So we'll talk about Jesus under many different aspects. We'll talk about friendship with Jesus this week. We'll do an open forum on Jesus this week. We'll end by talking about Christ the King this week. And today we have two wonderful guests for you. Second hour, we're going to talk about Jesus, the exorcist. It's clear in the Gospels that Jesus is an exorcist. And so we will talk about that with an exorcist, Father Vincent Lampert, the exorcist of the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, will be here to help us understand Christ's role as exorcist. What do the Gospel writers mean in pointing out Jesus the many occasions on which Jesus cast out demons? Is this a mental health issue? Is it something else? We'll talk with a contemporary exorcist about Jesus' role as an exorcist. This hour, however, we thought we'd start off Jesus Week. We'd begin Jesus Week with a very simple question. Did Jesus even exist? And we ask that question because it's important to establish the historical reliability of the person before you talk about anything else. We don't claim that Jesus is a myth. We don't claim that Jesus is a good idea. We claim that Jesus is a person who lived, died, and rose from the dead. So can we prove that he lived? If you have questions in that regard, whether you are a believer or unbeliever, this hour is for you. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884, and here to help us answer the question. And by the way, I asked him earlier today, and he already told me the answer. Did Jesus even exist? Is Trent Horn, apologist here at Catholic Answers and author of many things, including Why We're Catholic. Hello, Trent Horn.
Hello, Cy Kellett. Hence, it is when I first heard we were going to do Jesus Week here on the show, I was hoping for YouTube or television promos, we could have a promo. Because when you said Jesus Week, I asked, oh, so it's like Shark Week, but it's Jesus?
Yes, and so, that's exactly right.
So I wish we did more YouTube promos where it's like, you know, we show like the Sermon on the Mount, but Jesus isn't up on the mount. You just see him like his head going through the people in the crowd. Like,
oh, like a shark fin. Think about that. Like, we were going to do a logo for the week, for Jesus Week, of Jesus walking on water, and there was fins around him. Like, he's like above Shark Week.
So he's walking on the water and the sharks.
And the sharks are like circling him. That is our motto for the week, Jesus Week. It's like Shark Week, only better. That's our motto all week. We're going to be saying that.
So. I think I would have. I liked my original, which is it's like Shark Week, but with Jesus.
Yeah, well, that's it. I like that one too. Okay. I have to say, I like that one too.
Yeah, so it's a fun way to start off our Jesus Week, though, to talk about mythicism, which is the view that Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus Christ, was not a historical individual that lived in the space-time universe like the rest of us. So right. It'd be a fun idea to talk about today and answer people's questions if they have questions on this very interesting hypothesis.
On the existence of Jesus, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And there are many arguments that people make against the existence of Jesus. There's the mythicist argument, which is, well, Jesus is just a bunch of myths cobbled together, and you know, he's like Osiris, or he's like Persephone even, or something like that, you know, all those kinds of things. Or there's the, well, Paul made it all up thesis,
right?
And there's the delusional apostles thesis, right. A whole bunch of different things. Why don't you buy any of that? Why do you settle on the idea that Jesus is a real human being?
Well, this is an idea that I held long before becoming Christian myself. I believe, well, certainly there was a man named Jesus who existed. And when you look at individuals who claim that Jesus did not exist, usually they tend to be apologists for atheism. And I don't think that that's a coincidence, that most people who argue that there was no historical individual named Jesus whatsoever, they seem to already have a previous antagonism towards the Christian faith.
Uh-huh.
So towards disproving Christianity. Now, that does not mean that they're wrong. That would be an ad hominem argument. I'm not saying they're wrong because they have this motivation, but I think it's suspicious to me that these are the only people who tend to buy into this. Among academics, it's a thesis that is resoundingly rejected, but it enjoys widespread popularity among many popular level atheists, though there are some people who have the relevant degrees involved, like PhDs in ancient history or New Testament studies. There are a handful of people who have the relevant PhDs and push this theory. But amongst scholars, well, in fact, I am not aware of a single scholar teaching at a major university in the Western world who argues the view, at least in North America, who argues the view that Jesus never existed. So I actually brought some books here as, kind of props to discuss. For example, this is an interesting book here on the question. It's called Did Jesus Exist? The Historical Argument for Jesus of Nazareth by one Bart Ehrman.
Ah.
And so Ehrman takes the view, he says at the very beginning of this book, that it is the view of virtually every expert on the planet that Jesus did exist. And Ehrman is quite flummoxed and perplexed by the idea that there was no historical Jesus. For those who aren't familiar, Bart Ehrman used to be a conservative Christian. He went to school at Moody Bible Institute, where Bible is our middle name, over in Chicago. So very conservative Protestant school. Later, he lost his faith and he's become an agnostic, and he's one of the world's leading New Testament critics. He holds the chair of New Testament studies, I think, at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And so he's well known, very famous. You know, I don't know, Si, you remember seeing him go on the Colbert Report, maybe, talking with Stephen Colbert a little bit.
I've never
about
watched
Christianity.
The Colbert Report.
It's a fascinating interview he has with Ehrman, because Colbert actually once taught Sunday school and, you know, is going back and forth with him on this. But Ehrman is well-known media figure. He's very critical of Christianity. He claims in his book, Misquoting Jesus, that the manuscripts of the Bible are riddled with errors in them.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, we can't, you know, reconstruct the biblical text. He sells a lot of inflated ideas in his popular level works, but even him, who is an agnostic, very critical of Christianity, denies resurrection, denies the deity of Christ, he still holds it that Jesus certainly existed. So he wrote this book on the subject in 2012, kind of putting forward an argument against mythicism.
Yeah,
but it is it's certainly not a comprehensive treatment.
So in a certain sense, it's testimony against self-interest in Berman's case, in that he's
certainly
not a Christian and he wants to debunk Christianity, but he says,
yes,
come on, Jesus obviously existed.
No, that when you look at just the bare minimum standards of history and apply to the subject of seeing, was there a man named Jesus of Nazareth who started a movement and sent out apostles, sending out people throughout the ancient world very quickly, I would say. You have churches springing up all over the ancient world. This is an argument I owe to Jimmy Akin. You know, it's kind of a where there's smoke, there's fire argument. When you have people being sent out, that implies there is a sender,
yeah,
someone who is claiming to be the Messiah who is sending these individuals. And there's other arguments, but basically what we'll do, and we'll talk about here on the show, is that whenever you do history, history is not science. It's a science, but it's not empirical science. It's not like you can just do repeatable experiments to confirm history.
Yes.
You look at the evidence from the past, whether it's documentary, archaeological, testimonial, and you assess it together and try to come up with the best hypothesis. And the best hypothesis for all the evidence we have related to Jesus, both in the Bible and outside of the Bible, it leads to the conclusion there certainly was a man named Jesus of Nazareth. And we'll probably talk about this later here in the show side, but when I engage people who are critics, many of them will say, well, prove Jesus existed outside of the Bible. So they'll say, can you prove the Bible without the Bible? And I'll say, well, why should I have to do that?
Uh-huh.
You don't apply that same standard to other ancient works. People, you know, they'll say, oh, well, I'm not going to believe the Bible till you can corroborate it. Why? And what's interesting is,
you couldn't prove Socrates existed without the books of his followers,
right? Without the writings, without
the Buddha,
right? And yeah, there's varying degrees. So with Socrates, you couldn't prove he existed without the writings of Plato and Aristophanes. Buddha, the accounts of Buddha actually are comparatively late compared to Jesus, written about 400 years later, the same we have for Alexander the Great. So we have a wealth of evidence for Jesus that we don't have from any other ancient figures. Now, sometimes the comparisons are not fair. People will say, well, we don't have as much evidence, you know, we have more evidence for Julius Caesar than for Jesus. Well, sure, you're going to have more evidence for...
He was a public figure.
For Caesar Augustus. Even marginally more evidence for Pontius Pilate, for example. But it's interesting, when you look at the ancient world side, there's actually a lot of evidence that is missing. So take Pontius Pilate. Pilate is probably the procurator, prefect, depending on which title you use, the leader of Judea, the Roman governor of Judea, that we have the most historical evidence for, actually. And we don't have much for Pilate. We have one reference in Josephus. We have multiple references in Josephus. We have one reference in the Roman historian Tacitus, which is also the same place we read about Jesus. And we have some references in Philo and Josephus, but we don't have any writings of Pilate. We don't have any other documentary effects. We have a few coins that were minted. In fact, the first piece of archaeological evidence directly for Pilate was the Pilate stone. I saw a replica of it at Caesarea Maritima when I was in Israel. But they have it there, the Pilate stone. It was discovered in 1961 with Pilate's name etched on it.
Right.
But before the 60s, we didn't have any archaeological corroboration for someone who's the governor of an entire province.
Right.
So for Jesus, we have to compare him with other sages and other religious figures. But when we come back, I'm happy to break down the other kinds of arguments that mythicists make against Jesus, because there's a variety. You hinted at one, which would be the pagan copycat thesis.
Yeah.
That Jesus is just a copycat of Osiris, Isis, and other individuals. The other ones are different in how they go at trying to say Jesus didn't exist. I'm happy to broach those when we come back.
All right. It's the beginning of Jesus Week. We're super excited. We've been planning it for months here at Catholic Answers. We were going to have a conference on the person of Jesus in September, and that was canceled because of the illness. And so we decided, you know what, let's do an entire week of Jesus Week. Also, we just feel like we need it. There's nobody better to talk about. It makes you feel better to talk about Jesus, and we need to feel better. And we're going to enjoy a week of talking about the person that all the rest of this is about. The one person, if we could choose one for you to know, that we would choose would be Jesus. So we're going to spend a whole week together talking about Jesus. It's Jesus Week. Trent Horn is our first guest, our question this hour. Did Jesus even exist? 888-318-7884, our number. Right back.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Hey Alexa, how many ways can I get EWTN?
You can get EWTN on television, via cable and satellite, on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Google Play. You can get EWTN radio in your car, on Sirius XM Channel 130, and on the go, on any mobile device with the EWTN app. And here's the best news. Now you can get EWTN's great programming on me.
Got a bunch of great guests for you this week, the last week of the liturgical calendar for us Catholics and for most Christians around the world. And it's Jesus Week. It's like Shark Week.
But only with Jesus.
Our guest for the first hour of Jesus Week is Trent Horn, who wrote the book. He wrote a whole bunch of books, but he wrote the book Why We're Catholic. That's probably the most popular one, right? That's the most. And then the second most popular is probably What the Saints Never Said. He also wrote Answering Atheism, Persuasive Pro-Life.
What the Saints Never Said is probably trending number one on Amazon under interesting historiographical trivia. if there's a category on Amazon.
There's a category for everything on Amazon.
What's great with Amazon, if you want to be a number one seller on Amazon, just pick a niche topic. You could probably get there.
Obscure. Yeah.
That's the trick.
Our number here is 888-318-7884. If you don't believe that Jesus existed, or you don't trust the evidence, or you think we're too trusting of the evidence, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Or if you just like some help explaining the existence of Jesus as a historical reality, 888-318-7884. Shall we go to the phones?
Yeah, let's go to the phones first.
Let's go to Paolo in Scotland, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Paolo, thanks for starting us off. Go ahead with your question for Trent Horn.
Oh, hi guys. Yeah, so I hope this is relevant, but it's to do with the church, so it's still to do with Jesus. So
sure.
I just wanted to ask, is it reasonable to say, as a defense of the true church, that the reason I cannot choose another religion is because all other religions point back to a person that is not God, yet the Catholic Church is the only religion that has its root in God?
Well, I think that's a good argument, Paolo, for Christianity as a whole. So those who believe that Jesus of Nazareth is fully God and fully man, I think it is a good argument for the uniqueness of Christianity and why we should take Christianity seriously, in that other world religions point to human beings who try to tell us how to get to God. Other religions are about trying to get to God through one's own efforts. But Christianity is about God reaching down to human beings, condescending, coming down to our level, about God, the creator, infinite creator of the universe, the one infinite creator of the universe, becoming man. So I would say that it shows that Christianity is unique. It's not the full truth of Christianity, because then you would have to put forward further evidence that Jesus is God and that he vindicated this through his miracles, particularly through his most important miracle, which would be rising from the dead and vindicating his claims to being the only begotten Son of God. So I think that is a good point to bring up, to show that Christianity is distinct. It's not a myth like all others, and we'll talk about this a bit more in the show as we discuss the so-called pagan copycats and imitators of Christ, but I'm grateful you called in.
Okay, Paolo?
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm very happy to take your call. We don't get a lot of calls from Scotland, so we don't. Why are you laughing at me, Nick? We don't get a lot of calls from Scotland. It's nice to get a call from Scotland. 888-318-7884 is the number. I think you probably have to dial 01 from Scotland. Be in front of, is that right? 0? Yeah. And then you can, then you'll get us. But we're happy to take your calls on the existence of Jesus. Did Jesus exist? Right. If you don't believe the evidence, or if you believe you have evidence to the contrary and you'd like to discuss it with us, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We start out Jesus Week with this topic because it's a good one to establish, first of all, that he was in fact, or is in fact, a historical figure, not something that's made up, not a pretense, but an actual person who lived and died right where the Gospels say he lived and died. Carmen didn't stay on the line, but she asked, why don't people believe in Jesus when there is historical evidence of his existence? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what I would say is that those who are mythicists are aware of the evidence, but they read it in different ways. And so they have a variety of answers. The most common mythicist theory, or at least the one that's defended among the more scholarly capable mythicists, is that Jesus, the first Jesus, was not a human being or a rabbi that taught and led disciples, but that he was a kind of celestial figure, like that he was just kind of a angelic being, a celestial being that people worshiped. And so that he appeared to his first disciples via various visions or things like that, that he was. And so they, of course, if they're atheists, they would believe that these visions are purely natural, that these are things that, you know, people are having hallucinations of an angelic being speaking to them. And there was no historical Jesus. And so they offer a variety of arguments against the evidence. They'll say the evidence in non-Christian sources is interpolated by later Christians, their additions. They'll say that the earliest Christians don't speak about an earthly Jesus. They only speak about a heavenly figure in the writings of St. Paul, which is not true. Paul does reference a earthly Jesus. And then another very common argument is they will say that if Jesus existed, why didn't more ancient historians write about him? So those are a variety of the different arguments that are put forward, and I'm happy to break them down with you, Si, if you'd like to go into them in a little bit more detail.
I would like to go into them in a little bit more detail. I hadn't, maybe I've heard it, but I had forgotten about, if I did hear it, about the angelic being one. Can you just go into a little bit of detail on that one?
Yeah, so this is the idea that these mythicists who argue for this, not all mythicists are united. Some of them say that there was a Jesus, that the stories in the Gospels are based on a Jesus that lived 200 years earlier in like 200 BC. And so it's like a misplaced Jesus. But the common ones, people like Earl Doherty, Richard Carrier, they would argue that Jesus is not analogous, that the founder of Christianity was not Jesus as much as it was Peter. And that Jesus would be more analogous to like the angel Gabriel appearing to Joseph Smith. And so Jesus would be like that analogous that of Gabriel to Joseph Smith would be like Jesus to Peter and Paul, for example, that he was just merely part of a hallucinatory vision about a kind of angelic figure who would offer salvation to the Jews. And so the belief that what underscores this is that people will say that Paul does not talk about Jesus's ministry. And this is kind of an argument from the argument from silence in Paul's letters, saying if there was a Jesus, why doesn't Paul talk about the Sermon on the Mount? Why doesn't Paul talk about Jesus's miracles? And you think about it, so now the gears are turning in your head, right?
Well, actually, that doesn't seem that hard to explain to me in that Paul wasn't writing biographies. He was writing letters. He was just writing letters to people to work out issues for the most part.
Right. And some people will say, well, why didn't he quote Jesus more? And I would say he does quote Jesus and he references Jesus like in 1 Corinthians 7 and 11 when he talks about marriage, when he talks about the Eucharist.
He even gives us a quote from Jesus that doesn't exist anywhere else.
He does.
It's better to give.
Better to give than to receive when he's talking about being a cheerful giver.
Yeah.
So he does reference this, but you're right that at first it sounds like a powerful argument to people. Well, why doesn't Paul quote Jesus more or describe Jesus? But then the more you think about it, this argument starts to be full of holes. Number one, at a bare minimum level, when you explain Jesus to people, let's say you're sharing Jesus to someone to evangelize them.
Yeah.
A lot of time, if you were just evangelizing someone, you probably would not actually focus on Jesus's miracles, but the brunt of your evangelism would be focusing on Jesus's death by crucifixion and his resurrection. I mean, that is the core, the Paschal mystery is the core of the good news of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
His miracles are important, but there were people who claimed to be miracle workers and wonder workers in Jesus's day. What set Jesus apart was dying to atone for the sins of the world and his resurrection. So even Christians today, when they share the gospel, do not necessarily place a priority upon Jesus's earthly ministry, though that does appear more often when you catechize someone. But you're right, Paul's letters were episodic. They were meant to deal with particular struggles that people were undergoing in the church. But for me, Si, the strongest argument against the argument from silence in Paul's letters is that there were other Christians who wrote in the New Testament shortly thereafter who were aware of at least of stories about Jesus's ministry. Because what the mythicists will say is that Paul only knew an angelic Jesus. The stories of Jesus being an earthly wonder worker and traveling rabbi were developed after Paul's time, is what they will say. But the problem here is a few sources. Like if you read in the book of Acts, for example, in the book of Acts, the speeches that Peter gives and other people give about Jesus, the sermons, are primarily about Jesus's death and his crucifixion and his resurrection. Acts doesn't really cover hardly anything about Jesus's earthly ministry. But clearly the author of Acts knew about Jesus's earthly ministry because he was Luke.
Okay.
And so, but that silence in Acts.
Because he's Luke who wrote the Gospel of Luke.
That's right. So the silence in Acts about Jesus' earthly ministry does not prove the author of Acts was ignorant of it because the author of Acts was Luke. So that by that same parallel, the silence in Paul's letters would not confirm that Paul was ignorant of the earthly ministry of Jesus. And you can find similar things when you read, for example, the first through third letters of John. They barely mention Jesus, but they were certainly composed in the Johannine environment, if not by John himself. And clearly in that environment, people are well versed in Jesus's life from the Gospel of John. The Epistle of Barnabas is the same way. First Clement in the early church. So there's a variety of arguments that when you don't think through the principles, you might, oh, wow, that is strange. The mythicist arguments, Si, are powerful when they get people to think, oh, yeah, this is strange. when people bring up, especially with the pagan copycat thesis. But then when you drill into the details of all of the claims, you see it's not that strange at all that the claims are overstated.
Yeah.
And so that would be the same thing with the argument from Pauline Silence. And then maybe after we speak with another caller, well, actually, we'll probably have to go to a break here shortly. Maybe we'll speak to a caller. I can address one of the other arguments from silence that is a favorite among mythicists, and that would be the argument from historical silence. The argument being, if there really was this wonder worker, if he fed 5,000 people, Psy, why aren't there all these historical records about this person?
I got you.
Where is all that information? Maybe after we chat with a caller, we can talk about that argument.
All right. We will take a quick break and we'll continue with our first hour of Jesus Week. Our first guest for Jesus Week is Trent Horn. And the question this hour, did Jesus even exist? If you'd like to get in on that conversation, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884-888-31-TRUTH.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Dr. David Anders here. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Why confess my sins to a priest?
Find out more tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on Call to Communion.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Jesus Week, all this week, celebrating Jesus, talking about Jesus, considering Jesus, taking calls about Jesus, because this Sunday is the Feast of Christ the King, and it's been a tough year, and Christ is still the King, and we want to know all about him. So we're going to talk over the course of the week about a whole bunch of different topics that are all related to the person of Jesus. In the next hour, we're going to have an exorcist here with us, Father Vincent Lampert, and we're going to talk about Jesus the Exorcist. If you're interested in exorcism, and if you'd like to know what it was Jesus was doing as an exorcist and why he had a ministry as an exorcist, the next hour is perfect for you. We'll also answer basic questions like, what does it mean when we call Jesus the Word of God? Or how does one become a friend of Jesus? All kinds of stuff. That's what we're going to do all week. Take a break from the discord. Take away a break from the upset of the year and talk about what's really important, the person of Jesus Christ. It's Jesus Week. Just like Shark Week, only better. Our guest this hour is Trent Horn. We're taking calls about whether or not Jesus existed this hour. We're going to establish the historical reality of Jesus before we move on to other topics this week. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. You were going to go over one more thing before we went back to the calls, or do we want to go to the calls?
We can go to calls, right, and then we can discuss the argument from ancient silence, the idea why don't more historians write about Jesus, ancient historians.
Okay. All right. It does seem to me that there is a simple explanation for the way the Gospels were composed, Paul's letters were composed, the Acts of the Apostles were composed, and for the growth of the early church, which is that there was a community mm-hmm. that knew Jesus and then went out into the world to share Jesus. And these other things all developed naturally from that simple fact. They knew him, and they went out into the world to share him, which is what they said they did.
Right. I think that that provides strong evidence, especially for the quick dispersing of apostles, which means those who share a message.
Right.
And I think it's very compelling. But also we have to keep in mind that the earliest records we have from these apostles and from these disciples, especially those from St. Paul, is indicative of knowing a Jesus who actually lived and walked among his followers.
Sure.
And so I'll discuss that. I think we might have a caller here who's interested in the positive evidence for Jesus' existence. Perhaps we'll broach the subject there.
All right. Well, let's go first then we've got a few folks on the line, and you're welcome to get on the line if you want to talk about this topic. 888-318-7884, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Gil, watching on YouTube Live, is first up this segment. Gil, your question or comment, your contribution for Trent Horn.
The questions in reference to Jesus' bodily form.
Sure.
When he came to earth, of course, he was always deity, but he was in bodily form.
Right.
So the two questions I have, the first part was he always in bodily form prior to him coming to earth and right now in heaven? When I go there and I get my eyes back, will I be able to see Jesus in his bodily form, or is he going to be some kind of spirit form?
Sure, good question. In the Catechism, in paragraph 466 through 470, it talks about how the Son of God became man. He assumed human nature and made it his own as a way of communicating his divine person from the moment of his conception. So prior to Jesus' conception in the womb of the Blessed Mother, the Virgin Mary, Jesus existed since all eternity as the only begotten Son of God. So not created, begotten. So he is as eternal as the Father. He was the eternal God, the Son, second person of the Trinity. And so he existed in an immaterial form. He had no material aspect to his existence. And in fact, the divine nature, what makes God God, is that he is not confined in a material way. The part of the divine nature means not being made of matter. However, upon his conception in the womb of Mary, God the Son became man. So before 2,000 years ago, before that point, God the Son existed from all eternity as the immaterial second person of the Trinity. Then, upon being conceived in the womb of the Blessed Virgin, he assumes a human nature and has a material existence as a part of his human nature. He's one divine person with a fully divine nature and a fully human nature. Since that moment 2,000 years ago, Jesus has retained his fully human nature and will forever have a fully human nature. His incarnation is permanent. He will always be our eldest brother. He will always be united to humanity through the assumption of a human nature. So when we die, when we are in heaven, we will behold Jesus, the Lamb of God, either through supernatural knowledge God infuses into our souls, or through our resurrected eyeballs that'll have even better than 20/20 vision. We will behold Jesus in his material form. We will behold him as having a human nature like the rest of us. So in heaven, Jesus won't be some kind of angelic spirit. He will be fully God and fully man, the Lamb of God. We will see him in his full glory, a foretaste of what Peter and the apostles saw on the Mount of Transfiguration when Jesus' glory was temporarily and somewhat revealed on Mount Tabor in the Transfiguration. So, Gil, when you get to heaven, you'll see Jesus. He'll have a human body. He's always going to have a human nature. I hope that's
Gil?
Helpful.
Okay, fine. Thank you. And a real quick follow-up, if God the Father, he does not have a bodily form.
No.
He will always be in spirit, correct?
God the Father always is immaterial, only possesses a divine nature. Now, the Father throughout salvation history has manifested himself in different ways to be perceived by human beings. For example, to Moses, he appeared as a burning bush. So the Father can manifest himself in various ways to appear to human beings, but he does not have a human nature. Only the Son possesses that.
Gil, thanks very much. We're talking with Trent Horn about whether Jesus existed this hour. If you'd like to get in on that conversation, 888-318-7884. Let's go to Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Pat, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio, is next. Hey, Pat, your question for Trent.
All right, thank you. I appreciate you taking the call, and great to have you back, Trent. Been missing you.
I know. It's nice to be back. Very happy to be here.
I've got a simple question that always seems so simple to me.
I'll give you
a
simple answer.
Our calendar is even based off of when Christ lived. You know, it's the year 2020 after death. Isn't that where it's all designed from? Or could you elaborate on that?
Anno Domini, A.D., the year of our Lord 2020. So I see what you're saying. You might feel like, well, wait a minute. It should be obvious Jesus existed. I mean, look, our whole calendar, we say every year, we say it's the year 2020. 2020 from what? Well, 2020 years since Jesus was born, allegedly. So wouldn't that be evidence that Jesus existed? It's not evidence that Jesus existed as much as it is evidence that those who hold this particular calendar, the Gregorian calendar, highly value the incarnation. So it's not a solid proof that Jesus existed, because while, for example, the year is based on a calculation of Jesus's birth, well, there's other aspects of the calendar that are based on other things. For example, we say today is Monday, and that would be based, the days Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, those are actually based on days of the week celebrating pagan deities. So Wednesday is Odin's day, Thursday is Thor's day, Saturday, Saturn's day. So, just because the days of the week have their roots in pagan mythology, it doesn't follow that the calendar affirms these beings exist. It just shows that their historical past. Second, this is always important. Well, also second, it wouldn't be good evidence that Jesus existed, because there are other cultures that don't hold to the Gregorian calendar. So, for example, Jews have a calendar that doesn't acknowledge it's 2020. I think it acknowledges like the year 5600 something or other. So there are other calendars that can be used. But I would say it does give us pause, and we should really examine the Christian story and the historical evidence for Jesus. But we don't want to fall into the trap of thinking that Jesus was born exactly 2020 years ago, because the calculations that were done to base Jesus's birth or the calendar were drawn up by a monk in the early Middle Ages called Dionysius Exiguus, or Denis the Little, we would say today. And he miscalculated putting the years together. So ironically, scholars disagree and would say that Jesus was born. A lot of scholars would say, mainstream scholars would say Jesus was born, or secular scholars say he was born sometime between 6 BC or 4 BC, between 6 and 4 BC, based on the date of the death of Herod the Great. Though the church fathers in their discussions about when Jesus was born, when you add up their calculations, would place Jesus's birth closer to 2 BC or 3 BC, and place the death of Herod the Great closer to about 1 BC. There's a good book on that by Andrew Steinman on biblical chronology that sorts all of that out. My friend Jimmy Akin has, just look up Jimmy Akin, year Christ was born. He's written tons of articles just on answering that question. So it's important, because some people will ask me, well, in the year 30 BC, how do they know it was 30 BC?
Yeah, I know. Then they'd be like, oh, I can't wait till it's 29 BC.
Right. They didn't know that. In fact, in ancient calendars, you didn't have years so much as you would use designations based on their distance from famous historical events. So if you read, like, for example, at the Easter Vigil, we recite a dating of the Passion coming to us from the Gospel of Luke, saying in the 138th Olympiad, from 750 years since the foundation of Rome. And that was actually, in Jesus' time, a very common way to date things, was either how many years it was since the foundation of the city of Rome, or what Olympiad it was.
Yeah, right, right.
Because the Olympics were routine. Every 4 years you had Olympic festivals.
Right.
So it was an easy way to kind of keep track of the years that they were occurring. So when it comes to Jesus, you would set it in the late BC, though I will say this, Cy, it is highly amusing among scholars today who embrace the terms BCE and CE instead of BC and AD. So instead of before Christ and Anno Domini, which is in the year of our Lord, you have before the common era and the common or the current era, which I always ask the question, what is the difference between the two?
Yeah, what happened? Well, something happened
what
there.
What happened?
What was it?
What makes this the common era? And it's just kind of a silly way to
it.
It
always seemed to me that was a little bit petty. Like, even if you like say, I don't believe in Jesus and I this is a post-Christian society and I'm a secular person, what is the problem with marking the time the way it's always
even
been marked?
If you
because that's just
the
history of your society.
Even if you don't believe that Jesus is divine, even if you didn't believe Jesus existed, it would be silly as an atheist to deny. What is undeniable is the profound impact Christianity has had on the Western world.
Sure.
I mean, to deny that would be like to deny the sun is shining in the sky. It's very clear Christianity has had a profound impact. We live in a Christian
culture. But people
do
deny it.
And it's silly to do. It reminded me, Cy, of, I remember several years ago reading a report about an atheist student whose English teacher required him to read the Bible to understand biblical idioms. And he said, I'm not going to do that. You're injecting religion, so I'm not going to do it. And even other atheists criticized him, saying, well, the English teacher is not making you read the Bible as a religious text. They're saying you have to read the Bible. If you don't understand the Bible, you actually don't understand a lot of Western culture.
There's no way you could understand English literature if you don't know some phrases from the King James Bible.
You wouldn't understand it. Like to say like that he has the patience of Job.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know that unless you had understood the story of the book of Job or many other idioms. It's the same thing with Shakespeare or anything else. So yeah, with the calendar, it is interesting. It's something to talk about how profound Christianity has been on the Western world. But in and of itself, it's not a strong proof that Jesus existed.
Nick, Marie, I'd say we're off to a strong start for Jesus Week. How do you feel? Yep. Yeah. Okay. Thumbs up. Good. We're off to a strong start for Jesus Week. Trent Horn is our guest. We're talking about whether Jesus existed this hour. You're welcome to get in on that conversation. 888-318-7884. But the whole week is Jesus Week here at Catholic Answers. And it wouldn't really be Jesus Week if we didn't turn it into something commercial. Well, no, I shouldn't say it that way, but we do have special deals on our Jesus Week category over at shop.catholic.com. Basically, they took books and things that are related to Jesus and put them on sale for Jesus Week. A very special Christ the King pack, five different resources on Jesus for just $25. That's 65% off. Basically, they're at prices that are meant to get them into people's hands. So look for the Jesus Week category at the top of the page at shop.catholic.com.
We're waiting for your call. Grab that line and get on board.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
She is one of the most beloved saints of all time, honored as the saint of the little way.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
Saint Therese of Lisieux entered the Carmelite convent of Lisieux in 1888 and survived only 9 more years. Still, her extraordinary holiness and prayer life prompted her superiors to have her write an autobiography, The Story of a Soul. It became a spiritual classic.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. Next hour, Father Vincent Lambert, an exorcist, will be here to talk about Jesus, the exorcist, an important part of the ministry of Jesus. As a matter of fact, if you have questions about exorcism or about Jesus and his example to us of the ministry of exorcism, then you're welcome to call next hour. This hour, we're just talking about the basics. Did Jesus really exist? Is there evidence that Jesus really existed? 888-318-7884. The number up next is Alex in Florida. Hi, Alex. You there with us?
Yeah.
Well, this seems very entertaining to you, Alex. I have my finger on the hold button, so let's make it a good call, Alex.
How can we help you, Alex?
No, I just love Jesus.
Oh.
I just love Jesus.
Well, that's wonderful. Do you have a question about Jesus or Jesus existing?
All right, I tell you what. I'm going to move on because Alex seems up to some mischief, which I personally find tremendously entertaining, but I don't think we can let that go on any longer.
Well, at least he loves Jesus. And he loves Jesus. On a high note.
Yeah. Maybe gather your thoughts and we'll try it again another day, Alex.
Well, we should pick up a thread I addressed earlier before we go on to our next caller about the argument from ancient silence. So I hope we don't lose our next caller here. Actually, let's go to our next caller and then I'll talk about that because this is a really fascinating question.
Okay. All right. We do not want to lose our next caller. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you are up next. Try your best, John, to sound less mischievous than Alex in Florida. Hi, John.
Yeah, hello. Yes, somebody commented a little bit ago about the glorified body of Christ.
Right.
Along those lines, and in fact, what we have in store for ourselves at our own resurrection eventually. Mm-hmm. And I'm more or less postulating on an idea, like our existence right now, our temporal existence, our experience is in three dimensions, height, width, and depth. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised that a beatific vision is a clear vision, or the vision as Christ would see us and others, and that it could actually be like a fourth or an uncountable amount of dimensions beyond it, because we're talking about eternity.
Right.
Wow.
See what I'm saying there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of floored. But
right. So what will our existence be like in heaven, and will it transcend the dimensional existence we currently have here on earth? I would say certainly what we do know is that our existence in heaven will be dramatically different than the existence we have here on earth, and with the beatific vision and beholding God as he really is. Paul says in his letters that now what we see of God now is like how you see yourself in a bronze mirror. So, Sai, like when it says like seeing in a mirror dimly, that can be hard for us as modern people to understand, because a lot of mirrors, we see ourselves almost too well in certain mirrors. You know, the makeup mirrors and the lights and all that stuff.
They're all dimly.
Right. But in Paul's time, glass mirrors were only just starting to be produced in Egypt. Rather, the more common mirror would have been a polished bronze mirror. So you take bronze and just polish the heck out of it, and you can see a reflection in it. It's just a kind of a dim reflection.
Yeah.
And so what heaven will be like is like that. We can have a dim, faint idea of it, not a perfect idea. There's some things we know that won't be the case. So when we think about different dimensions, we live in three, you know, there's one dimension that would be a mathematical point that exists. There's a point in mathematical space that has, it has only height. It doesn't have width. It doesn't have depth. So there's not really a way to measure. You just know there's a mathematical point. Two-dimensional space would be like you have on a drawing piece of paper, height and width, or height and width, or length and width, however you want to describe it. The third dimension would be height, width, and depth. So we have depth, three-dimensional objects. The fourth dimension is typically understood to be time. So you have a three-dimensional object, but it undergoes temporal change, would be a perception of the fourth dimension. Then you get higher up in dimensions, it gets really difficult to understand them. Fifth and sixth dimensional, it's you can't really visualize it. It can only be encapsulated in mathematical formulas.
That's how I do it.
Right. So string theorists, for example, will have formulas based on these higher dimensional spaces to understand reality and mathematically model it. But for us to comprehend what fifth dimensional space is like would be on par with a two-dimensional object trying to comprehend three-dimensional space. There is a famous short story from 1884 by Edwin Abbott called Flatland, A Tale of Interdimensional Romance, about someone communicating with a two-dimensional sentient object. And this two-dimensional object is thinking, you know, are you God? What are you? How are you? Where are you? It's like, well, I'm above you. But imagine, you know, I have a piece of paper here and I draw the stick figure. What is above? We can see above the stick figure, but above him would be just be higher up on the paper.
Yeah.
And I'd say, well, no,
on
I'm
the
not
X-axis.
I'm not up there. I'm above you in another way. And he couldn't wrap his head around it. Or, for example, if you had a stick figure in a little house on a piece of paper, I could look at it and say, oh, the little stick figure of the drawing is outside the house. Well, how did you see that? Well, because I can see all of it. Yeah. So I would say that we don't have a precise idea, John, as to what our dimensional awareness will be. I think we will have higher dimensional awareness. If the saints in heaven are able to intercede for many people at once, for example, Cy, I believe there may be some kind of higher awareness, either higher cognitive functioning awareness. It could be that time, let's say, for example, that what we would perceive as a saint simultaneously answering prayers at once, from the saint's perspective of time, they are stretched out over periods that we cannot directly access. So it could be either higher cognitive abilities that appear to be accessing higher dimensional space, or the direct knowledge of higher dimensional space. But there are some things I believe we will not do. So, for example, some people will say that when we go to heaven, when we're in heaven, we'll be timeless. I would say, no, we won't be timeless. Only God exists in a timeless way. God's eternity means he possesses all of his temporal life in a single moment. So he has complete, perfect possession of his temporal life. It is not spaced out over time. For God, everything exists as a perfect now. We are temporal creatures because God is perfect being. So St. Thomas says he's perfect act. There is no potency in God. There's no potentials in God. God's not lacking anything, right?
Right.
So God's not lacking. Because God is not lacking anything, God can't be temporal. Because to be temporal means you lack something, like your future.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened yet. Your future's potential. But God has no potentials. So he cannot be temporal like we are. However, so that means we can't be timeless like he is, because we have potency, we have potential. We can't exist in a timeless way like God. We are very temporal. To praise God, for example, like heaven, the Bible talks about heaven where we'll praise God, worship him. Praise and worship are things that occur on a temporal stream. They happen over time. So I would say, John, that we will have an expanded understanding of ourselves, of reality, and even of higher dimensional space than may be the case in reality, but we won't become timeless or share in God's unique existence in that way. So I hope that is a helpful answer.
I am very grateful for that question, John, because of the answer it occasioned. I appreciate it. Our topic today, does or did Jesus actually exist as a historical figure? This is the beginning of Jesus Week. Let's see if we can get Matthew in Vail, Arizona on before we have to go.
If we don't get to the argument from silence from ancient historians, everyone's like, what are the arguments from silence from ancient historians? Here's what I'll promise you, two things. Number one, I'm going to cover it this week on my own podcast, The Council of Trent.
Oh, great.
On Thursday. So if you want to go to The Council of Trent, I will be doing an in-depth study of this topic or it might even be tomorrow. It might even be for tomorrow's episode. Go to Council of Trent, available on iTunes, Google Play. Check that out. Or my book, Counterfeit Christ, has it. But you never know what will happen.
All right. Let us go real quick to Vail, Arizona. Matthew, you there with us?
Hello?
Oh, hi, Matthew. If you could ask your question real quick for Trent.
Okay. My sister, she has left the Catholic faith a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
She just doesn't believe in the Eucharist anymore, and if she ever tries to tempt me to leave the faith, I want to give her background knowledge of the Eucharist.
Oh, God bless you.
Matthew, is she Christian or is she not Christian anymore?
She's Christian, but she's just not Catholic. I think she's Protestant.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I would say, Matthew, why do we believe the Eucharist is really Jesus' body and blood? The simplest answer you could give your sister is because Jesus said so. Like, go to John chapter 6, and you can read there verses 53 through 57, and Jesus makes it very, very clear when we receive in the Eucharist, he says, my flesh is true food, my blood is true drink. So John 6, 53 through 57, Jesus said so. You can also go to another part of the Bible where St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11 that we receive Jesus in the Eucharist. But I tell you what, Matthew, stay on the line. Our producers are ahead of me. We're going to send you my book, Why We're Catholic. And it has a whole chapter on why we believe in the Eucharist. So Matthew, stay on the line. We will send you Why We're Catholic as a chapter on the Eucharist. In fact, we'll send you two copies, one for you and one for your sister. Marie, send him two copies. And I hope that blesses you. And I'll ask our listeners to pray for you.
And deduct that from Trent's account. Matthew, thank you very much for that call. Thanks.
Happy to do so.
And Trent, thank you for starting us off on Jesus Week.
Hey, I'm looking forward to the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And just coming up the next hour is going to be Father Vincent Lampert. We're going to talk about Jesus the Exorcist. So if you are interested in exorcism and in particular interested in what exactly is Jesus up to when he does this ministry of exorcism, the next hour is for you. Join us as we continue with Jesus Week on Catholic Answers Live.